Let's look at Matthew 20. Let's start in 24. And we're going to do another one of those things. You're going to get an opening scene, a scene change, and a question. And after these guys ask Jesus the question, he will start talking. And from the time that he starts talking at the end of that question, he will talk all the way to the end of chapter 25. Now, I think sometimes we read that, and again, it's busted up into sections because some translator had to put his pen down, go get a Diet Coke. And so he put that divider there. This is one discourse that he has with the disciples. Now, I typically don't title my sermons. I do 9 times out of 10. I'll do what's known as expository preaching. And there's a real easy way to explain that. You read a text, you look for 3 things. Facts. Who, what, when, where, how big, how high, how many. Who is he writing? Who is he writing to? Who's writing it? The facts lead to concepts. Concepts lead to applications. That's how I study. That's probably how all literature is studied. What are the facts? What are the concepts? What are the applications? And so I typically don't have a list of titles for my lessons. I put them in a file based on the text I'm using and pull them out as I use them. But every now and then you do a gospel meeting and you have to turn in titles. So the title for this lesson is the Duh-Huh Lesson. Now, I don't know if you understand Duh-Huh in Tennessee, but we understand it in Alabama, all right? I go to Walmart sometimes really, really, really early in the morning because of the way I edge my fence. I buy this stuff, and if the EPA ever catches me, I'll be under the jail. But I have to sneak in there to get the lethal concoction. I killed a power pole last year with it. But anyway, I prowl around Walmart looking for my recipe. And this kid comes around the corner pushing a side-by-side stroller. Had these 2 little babies in there, fat as mud. Young man looked like he hadn't slept in years. He's just kind of staggering behind that. And behind him comes this little girl, and she's got the 3rd one. 3 little fat babies, just as healthy and pretty as they could be. Now, everybody standing here knows what's going on, right? I couldn't help myself. It's like I had a string tied to my face. I walked up to that young man and said, "Are those triplets?" Well, I don't know what I expected. No, we got the 4th one in the car, you know. I know what I thought, but you know, that's the duh. You ask this obvious thing. I hunt a little place called Keel Mountain, K-E-E-L. Hardy Keel, Native American, left the Trail of Tears migration. The Trail of Tears corridor comes right through the valley where we live. And he snuck off from that with a girl and settled Keel Mountain. And I have permission to hunt about 80 acres up there and prowl around. And the way to get to Keel Mountain from my house involves going through the drive-thru at Hardy's. Oddest map. Sitting there in the drive-thru before daylight, camouflage boots, camouflage pants, camouflage shirt, camouflage gloves, camouflage hat, camouflage bow in the front seat. Little girl says, "You going hunting?" I said, "Nope, there's an Indian problem on Keel Mountain. We're trying to fight fair." So this is one of those things, when you hear what Jesus tells these guys, their response would be, "Well, yeah." And then he drops the hammer. All right? So we start out in Matthew 24. And Jesus departed and went out from the temple. His disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said, "Do you see these things? Assuredly I say to you, not one stone will be left here upon the other that shall not be thrown down." So they're walking outside the temple. Temple is built on Mount Moriah. By the way, Moriah is where God told Abraham to go and sacrifice Isaac. Solomon's temple was built there. And the Roman fortress Antonio would have been on the back northeast side of the temple complex. Jesus standing in the Roman fortress Antonio in front of Pontius Pilate would have been condemned to die within 2 football fields of where Abraham sacrificed Isaac. These locations are not accidental. These events are not coincidental. Now, the original Solomon's temple had a footprint about the size of a basketball court. It wasn't very big at all, but it was impressive. Everything was overlaid in hammered gold, inlaid with ivory. Ezra's temple was built on the same plan, but it was not did not have the glory of the previous temple. The old priest who remembered the first temple cried when they saw the second temple. Herod building this thing has really gone out. I mean, it wasn't just a building, it was a complex. You had the original footprint of the Salamic temple, and then you had courtyards, and you had porches, and you had dormitories. They would have cut blocks out of solid stone and drug them into place, and some of those blocks would not have fit inside this aisle. Single piece cut blocks underneath the old temple. There's blocks with the pedestal still attached to them where you could attach ropes and drag them. By the way, have you ever seen a rock quarry? We believe that the place known as the Skull, Golgotha, was the rock quarry. That's why it's bare rock, because they dug the rocks out of there to build the temple. The stone the builders rejected was crucified in a rock quarry. Not accidental, not coincidental. Now, you walk outside the temple. If you go outside the northeastern edge, then you're on the edge of the Kidron Valley. The little valley drops away. You go down through the Kidron Valley, and you go up the other side. There's a little place called the Mount of Olives, about 200 feet higher than the city of Jerusalem. If you come out the southern end of the temple and go down the trail, it's the ascent of the Mount of Olives. And so you could step outside the temple and be 16 stories up. You could look up and there's this massive structure. And so, you know, these old country boy Galileans walk outside the temple. It's like, oh, man. And they're looking at that thing and they're like a little bunch of little kids in New York. Look at this big building. Look at this big building. Lord, have you seen this building? He goes, yeah, I see it. You know, one of these days, there's not going to be a single rock on top of the other. You ever had anybody just rain all over your parade? Take the wind out of your sails? I mean, these guys are excited about how beautiful this temple is. And Jesus goes, yeah, yeah, it ain't going to be there long. Wow. Now, in my mind, and that's a dangerous, scary place, but in my mind, they walk from the point of that statement through the Kidron Valley, all the way up to the Mount of Olives and into this little garden called Gethsemane, the olive press or the crushing place, a place where they processed olive pits and crushed the seeds to get olive oil out of them. I read sometime in Isaiah when it says it pleased the Lord to crush him. He's in the crushing place when he prays that agonizing prayer. So they walk out of the temple after Jesus said, yeah, yeah, those stones aren't going to be on top of each other one day. They get up to the Mount of Olives and they're there by themselves. Verse 3. Now as he sat on the Mount of Olives, so if you've walked from leaving the temple through the valley to the Mount of Olives and he's sitting there in the olive garden, and he sat on the Mount of Olives, his disciples came to him privately and said, tell us, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Now in their minds, if you don't have a temple, the world has ended. If you lose the temple, it's the apocalypse. Dogs and cats living together, you know, that kind of stuff. It's over. But what they've really asked is two questions. They've asked, when will the temple be destroyed and what will be the sign of the end of the age? They think that's one thing, because in their simple minds, if you don't have the temple in Jerusalem, the world as we know have ended. Right? If you'd have told me 20 years ago that I could look at the skyline of New York City and not see those two buildings there, that a foreign power would kill 3,000 American citizens on our soil, I'd laugh in your face. You've lost your mind. The world will end before that'll happen. Well, it happened, didn't it? So they've asked Jesus about this temple event, and it scares them. Because if you don't have a temple, the world is ended. So they ask, when will these things be? No stone left on top of the other, and what will be the sign of the coming of the end of the end of the age? And so Jesus begins at this point to explain to them, and he will basically talk about the destruction of the temple and the end of the world. And when he gets to discussing the end of the world, well, we'll get to that. So notice what he says. Take heed that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. My poor grandmother, born in 1900. sit there with that old Bible on her lap, go, wars and rumors of wars. Anytime anything happened that was a tragedy, my grandmother would say, wars and rumors of wars. Granny, read your Bible. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that these things do not trouble you. Because all these things must come to pass. Nation will rise against nation. The end is not yet. Nation will rise against nation. Kingdom against kingdom. There'll be famines, pestilence, earthquakes in various places. All these things are the beginning of sorrows. Jesus says, look, you're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. Let me tell you what that means. It means as long as there's a planet occupied by people, they're going to fight. Because we're selfish. And so when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't worry about that. As long as there's selfish people on the planet, nations will fight against other nations because we want what the other nation has, whether it's gold, food, or oil. And by the way, you're going to hear of famines and pestilence and earthquakes. And as long as you live on a planet that's controlled by physics, it's going to have burping pains every now and then. In order for the planet to stay stabilized, tectonic plates have to move. Volcanoes have to vent. If you didn't, you'd get this really big problem. He says, look, don't let those things bother you. They're not predictive of anything. They're proof that you live on a planet controlled by physics and a planet occupied by people. Don't worry about that. And then he goes ahead and says, but now there's going to be some things that you can see, and there's going to be some things that you can tell. He says, as obvious, and we're going to have to run because of the clock, as obvious as a woman in labor pains and as obvious as the blossoms on an almond tree, you know when summer's coming. He said, well, when the Roman army decides to come, you'll know it. Now, you've got this group of Jewish believers called Zealots, and they go out and they destroy a Roman fortress. Now, Jerusalem was the rock on which many Roman politicians were broken. Pontius Pilates would have been the next Caesar of Rome had he not done this little stint in this little place called Jerusalem and ended up having a trial on Passover weekend for this guy named Jesus from Nazareth. And for all practical purposes, Pilate disappears from history after that. The Zealots come out here and they kill this group of Romans in this small isolated fortress. And Vespasian says, you know what? I'm pretty much done with this little hornet's nest at Jerusalem. They've been nothing but trouble since we conquered it. I'm going to go out there and stomp that thing out. And he's marching toward Jerusalem. The Caesar dies in Rome. They pull Vespasian back. He becomes the Caesar. And in 70 AD, he sends his son Titus and says, by the way, that little unfinished project over there in Jerusalem, go take care of that. Titus moves in and they crucify a million Jews outside the city of Jerusalem. This thing about there'll be a tribulation and things that you've never seen before. When the Romans burst into the temple, in order to save the temple gold, the priest would eat the gold and the Romans cut it out of them while they were standing there with that Roman short sword. Yeah, there have been things happen there that haven't happened since the beginning of the world. And he says, when the Roman army marches against Jerusalem, you'll be able to tell it. Because when Rome marched, the world shook. And they'd come in, they'd build a city around a city. You have people standing inside this city, starving to death, and Rome would feed their army out in front of them. At one point during the siege, they built ramps over the wall. They just piled dirt up and walk over the wall. They broke through the outer wall, broke through the inner wall, and they finally took the city. They're standing on the Temple Mount. Titus sends an envoy back and says, what do I do with the temple? His father says, raise it. That's not R-A-I-S-E, but R-A-Z-E, like I did my head this morning. And that's what they did. They scraped it to the ground. Not one stone left on top of the other. You visit Rome today, there's an arch called the Arch of Titus. You've got a Roman general standing in a chariot like this, holding a candlestick. It's the candelabra from the temple of God in Jerusalem, 70 AD. And Jesus says, look, when it comes time for Jerusalem to be destroyed, you'll be able to tell it. Josephus will report that not a single Christian perished in this siege because they'd been warned, they'd been told, the prophets foretold it, and the Christians got out. He said, now when it happens, you better hope you're not nursing a baby. You better hope it's not on the Sabbath day, and you better hope it's not wintertime. Because you have to get out of the city and flee to the mountains. You don't want it to be rough terrain. You don't want to be carrying an infant. You don't want it to be on a Sabbath day where you have to break the law about how far you go on the Sabbath. You just don't want to do that. And so he warns them about the fall of Jerusalem. But then look at verse 36 of chapter 24. But, okay, contrasting statement. I've warned you about the destruction of Jerusalem. Now I'm going to talk to you about the other part of your question. But of that day and hour, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man. Jesus said, look, let me tell you. When the end of the world comes, it'll be just like happened with Noah. People going about caring about business, and all of a sudden the floods above burst open, the floods from the ground burst open, wiped them out. You've ever been to a cave? I've got a buddy who maps underground caves. He said he does not believe caves were formed by water trickling in. He believes caves were formed by water blowing out. Cavitation pressure from water. Water's non-compressible. You can take an IV bag full of water, tape it to a door, put a blasting cap in it, and shoot it, and it'll fold that door up. That's how SWAT teams enter buildings without explosives. We use water. You take one of those big water jugs and roll it under a van and open it up like a sardine can. Water's non-compressible. And when God said, hey, water below, get out, it cut Carlsbad Caverns and McMinnville's Cavern because that water cavitation pressure blew out. When those folks were sitting around eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage and the water started flowing, there was nothing they could do about it. They had no idea it was coming. He said, when the Son of Man comes, he said, I can't tell you who, I can't tell you when. My Father knows. He's not told me. He's not told the angels. But when it happens, it'll happen suddenly. It'll happen rapidly. Now, since I can't tell you when it would be, I can tell you how to prepare for it. Chapter 24, verse 45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Bless that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. For I tell you, he'll make him ruler over all his goods. So he says, look, I can't tell you when the end of the world will come, but I can tell you how to prepare for it. Let me tell you how to prepare for the end of the world. And he's going to tell three stories to his disciples. And when he tells these stories to his disciples, they're going to be like, and? Listen to the stories he tells them about how to prepare for the end of the world. Verse 1 of 25. The kingdom of heaven shall be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now, 5 of them were wise and 5 of them were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. And while the bridegroom was delayed, they slumbered and slept. And at midnight, the cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him. And all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered and said, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you. Go to those who sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in and the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other virgins came and said, Lord, Lord, open to us. He said, surely I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore and pray, for you neither know the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. Now, because the clock is chasing us, I can't read the rest of this. But the next parable is, hey, you've got this boss. And the kingdom of heaven is like this boss. He brings his servant in and he gives this guy 5 talents. He gives this guy 2 talents. Give this guy 1 talent. Says, now you guys do something with your talents while I'm gone. He leaves, comes back. When he comes back, he says, how'd it go? Guy with 5 talents said, I made 5 more. Guy with 2 said, hey, I doubled mine. Guy with 1 said, look, I knew you were a hard man. You reap where you did not sow. You gather where you have not scattered seed. I took mine, hid it in the ground. He said, you wicked servant. You admitted that you know I'm a hard man. You know I reap where I have not sown, gather where I have not scattered seed. And would you should at least put my money in the bank and let it draw on some interest. Take this wicked servant and throw him out. And take his talent and give it to the guy who has 10. Now, when you read those, he says, you want to prepare for the end of the world? Yeah, I'd like to prepare for the end of the world. Well, it'd be like this. If you're a lady and you get invited to an after dark wedding, Are there rules at after dark weddings? Right? You're supposed to wear a certain color after 5, right? It's a formal wedding. You have to wear black. The ladies have all these secret rules. If you invite somebody to a wedding, you've got to put the invitation in an envelope, and you've got to put that envelope in another envelope. The guy who invented that sells envelopes. I'll tell you that right now. All right? You can't wear the color white before Easter and after Labor Day. Right? I asked my wife, I said, is that really a rule? She said, that's really a rule. I said, do I have to carry a stainless steel pistol after Easter and before Labor Day? And then go back to my, anyway. If you're a lady and they've asked you, okay, we want you to be in the wedding party. And your job is to escort the groom. Now, their weddings were different than our weddings. All right? Our weddings, the main event is what? That pretty bride walks down that aisle in that white dress. Their main event was the dude. I wouldn't swim through chocolate milk with my mouth open to watch some dude walk into a wedding. I mean, that's just terrible. But their big deal was the dude. What had happened, the bridegroom would come and make the arrangements to be married. He would go away and prepare his household, and he would come again and receive her to himself, that where he was, she could be also. Sound familiar to anything you've ever read? So he's coming into town, and he's coming into town after dark, and if you've been invited to escort the bridal party, if you're going to an after dark event, what should you bring? A lamp. And if you bring your lamp, what do lamps eat? Oil. So if you end up at an after dark wedding and you're supposed to bring a lamp and you didn't bring any oil, duh, right? Hey, look, you guys want to prepare for the kingdom? If you get invited to an after dark wedding, take your lamp, take your oil. And the disciples are like, and? Now they tell us in the tactical world, one light is none, two lights is one. If you end up somewhere, you better have enough bulbs and batteries to make it do, because everything doesn't happen in a day. In fact, my truck, enough food for 2 days, enough water for 2 days, and at least 2 pairs of clothes. And so my call-out stuff in my truck is that. And so these ladies come to this wedding, and they didn't bring any oil. And the disciples are like, that's a special kind of stupid. I probably shouldn't say that. They're kids. Anyway, that's a special kind of illiteracy. You've been asked to go to a wedding, and you're supposed to take a lamp. You brought your lamp, but you didn't bring oil. And then you got this guy, and he brings his business team in. He says, I'm going to put you guys in charge of some assets. Now, when you think of these guys giving his friends or his men talents, that's not that little piece of silver you got at Vacation Bible School. That was actually a little piece of chocolate wrapped in silver, because I always ate mine. This is 75 pounds of silver. Either bags of silver or a kettlebell. Those of you CrossFitters in the room. A kettlebell made of silver. Some loose computations. The time I did this has been several years ago. $265,000. See, it's not about talents. We take that word talents and we make it a play on words. No, look at that text. Interest, money, accounts, banks. He gives these guys a capital investment and said, I'm going to give you, the least that he gave out was $265,000. If your boss calls you in and says, here's a quarter mil, what are you supposed to do with that thing? What do you do with $250,000 if your boss gives it to you? Make it grow. Now, it's not like it's a bad economy, because the guy with 5 doubles his, the guy with 2 doubles his. The guy with 1 takes a quarter of $1 million and says, I think I'll hide it in a mason jar under the mattress, and my boss will be happy when he gets back in town with it. Well, his boss comes back into town. He said, look, I knew you were a hard man. Look, when you get in trouble, don't tell people what you know. Because if you know, then there's no excuse for it, right? Now, this guy's not a bad businessman. He's an excellent businessman. You reap where you did not sow. You gather where you have not scattered seed. You know, suppose you own one of those big combine tractors. And you've been out here harvesting your thousands of acres. And you're driving home. And there's a guy out here. He's got 1 acre of beans. He's out there hand picking. And you shut that thing down and raise the window of that air-conditioned cab. Say, hey, man, what you doing? Picking beans. How long is it going to take you? A month. Tell you what I'll do. I'll run my tractor through here and we'll be home in time for the ball game. But I'll get 5% of what's in this field. Done. He's just reaped where he has not sown. He's just gathered where he has not scattered seed. He's using his resources to get resources. In this story, when Jesus says, look, if your boss gave you $250,000 and asked you to do something with it, what should you do with it? You should make more money. You want to prepare for the second coming? If you get invited to an after dark wedding, bring light. If your boss gives you assets and resources of money, make them grow. And the disciples are standing like, and? Then, verse 31 of chapter 25. Not the kingdom of heaven will be like, not the kingdom of heaven is likened to, when the Son of Man comes and all his holy angels with him, he'll sit on the throne of his glory and the nations will be gathered before him. He'll separate them one from another as a shepherd divides the sheep from his goats. He'll set the sheep on his right hand, the goats on his left, and he'll say to those, come you blessed of my Father, into the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. God's intention, before God said, let there be light, prepared before the foundation of the world, was for us to be with him. That's God's intention for us. When my daughter said that she was expecting a minion, I ordered 3 Class 2 utility poles, had them dropped in my yard from Langdale Forest Products. I built a 35-foot tower, 3 stories, 160-foot zip line, and one of those giant black tubes that's a slide for my grandson. He's 2. A little overkill, I guess. You ride the zip line when you're 6 months old. The car seat, I mean, those things are indestructible. Got a 6-point attachment, just hook him up and ride him down. What his mother does not know will not hurt her. But we'll, if I live long enough, on one of these beautiful October days, we'll be sitting on top of that tower in our hammocks. And I'll say, before I ever knew if you were a little boy or a little girl, before I ever knew your name or heard your laughter, I built this for us to play in. That's God's kingdom. Before you had a name, before you took your first breath, I prepared a kingdom for you to be with me in. Now, how do you get in the kingdom? I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty, you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and in prison, you visited me. I was in prison, you came to me. The righteous will say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will say, surely I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. And look at those on the left hand. Depart from me, I never knew you. You go to the place prepared for the devil and his angels. Hell was not designed with you in mind. Hell was designed for the devil and his angels. God won't send you there, but he'll let you go if you choose to reject him. His intention was for you to live with him. He built hell for the devil. Not designed for us, but we can end up there. Well, how do you end up there? I was hungry, you didn't feed me. I was thirsty, you didn't give me a drink. I was naked, you didn't clothe me. I was sick and in prison, you didn't minister to me. Lord, when did we see you in any of those situations that didn't service you? In as much as you didn't do it to one of the least of these, you didn't do it to me. You want to prepare for the coming of the Lord? You want to know how to be ready? If you get invited to an after dark wedding, what should you take? A lamp. What should you put in your lamp? If your boss gives you $250,000, what should you do with it? If you run into somebody today who's sick, hurt, weak, hungry, helpless, confined, why did you run into them today? It's as obvious as oil in a lamp and money in the bank. You want to prepare for the second coming? Duh. It's how you treat people. You know anybody who's hungry or thirsty or scared or weak or suffering or confined or helpless? Well, you know what to do with oil and lamps, don't you? That's such an obvious story. I don't know why you told it. You know what a guy's supposed to do with $250,000 his boss gives him for investment in this physical quarter? Yeah, yeah. You know what to do with those people out here that you're going to pass today when you go to lunch? And that person who lives next door to you who's suffering? And those announcements they make from the pulpit about those people who need prayers and who are confined? Yeah, it's that obvious. Yes, that's simple. It's as obvious as oil for a lamp and money in the bank. You guys know who Morgan Freeman is? Morgan Freeman is an actor. He was born in Tennessee, but actually grew up right around Batesville, Mississippi. Still has a little farm in Batesville, Mississippi. His brother still lives outside Batesville, Mississippi. His brother is a plumber. Morgan Freeman bought the family farm and after some fame and fortune, added about 100 acres to it. And when he's not doing the Hollywood thing, he comes back to Batesville, Mississippi area and uses his little farm as a retreat. His brother, the plumber, is always trying to get him to go down to the local school and meet children and sign autographs and yada, yada, yada. Mr. Freeman has bought computers for the school and donated some money, but he's never been to the school. So I was reading this story on an airplane. One of the trips that he made home, his brother finally convinced him, hey, Monday morning, we're getting up, we're going down to the school. And so they get up Monday morning, they go down to the school. I think it's like a fourth grade classroom. They walk down the hall and they pop in the door and the little teacher goes, children, look who's here. And a little boy about the eighth row goes, it's the plumber. The plumber doesn't have $1 million. Plumber's not on a poster. Plumber doesn't have an Emmy or a Grammy or whatever they give those guys. But when you can't have my birthday party because the pipes are busted, guess who comes crawls under the house? We're going to have to cancel our gathering at Christmas because the toilet is overflowing. Guess who comes to your house? See, influencing people is not about fame or riches or power or glory. It's about showing up when things are broken and overflowing. What would happen if you walked into Walmart or the restaurant or just got out at school and the people there went, it's the Christian? Because we'd been there when stuff went wrong. We'd been there when they were weak or hurt, or tired, or scared, or lonely, or confined. What if our reputation was that's what we do because that's who we serve? If we did that, you couldn't build the building big enough to hold them. And then when the king comes back, he'll say, what did you do with the obvious stuff I put in your path in Cookeville, Tennessee? Why are they in your path if they're not your job? How do I prepare? If I see somebody who's sick or tired or hungry or lonely or naked or scared or weak or confined, it's as obvious as oil in a lamp and money in the bank. Thank you for your time this morning.